Lost my heart and hope to die. If I ever, ever told a lie, feelings and guilty just said, choose a bad place when you're dead. Washington, he never lied.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, where fanfic of a fanfic itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about post-apocalyptic wasteland, and Mellow Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hello, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
He most certainly is not. Fi is accompanied by one Sir Weirdington Esquire.
Yeah, we're a season finale again. Yay! Part two of the season finale. Woo! We're almost done book three. Gonna move on to book four. I hope you're excited because I'm certainly feeling emotions.
My stomach's churning. I have no idea what to possibly expect because, as stated earlier, like, we don't have any reason to be here. And in fact, in the recap I'm about to do, it's directly highlighted by the characters that there's no reason to be here.
This was all a mistake.
You know what? I don't think it even qualifies as a mistake, because, like, a mistake, I think sort of I think the epistemology of the word mistake kind of requires, the definition of mistake requires, like, some... At some point, it must have seemed like a good idea for it to have been a mistake. This is like an implausible action that we have realized was never required. Like, I don't... Yeah, I guess the mistake is the only word for it, but surely there has to be a... No, there isn't, because human beings don't operate like this. A fever is broken, I guess. It was, like... I don't know that it can surely be called a mistake if there was no reason to do the thing in the first place. If there was no, meaningful act of volition beyond a capricious god demanding it. But anyway, so, yeah, we started off last chapter inside the Hell Building. We went through a couple floors of the dungeon and, like, had a slimy slime adventure. And then another thing that burned a mummy we had on hand. The, sort of delirious ghoul, who should be, like, poisoning every living person on this expedition. But isn't, is also not delusional anymore, because that it would also be inconvenient. Just no stakes, no consistency of character or consequence, like, just the worst kind of Calvin Ball.
She does feel bad about it, though. Like, there's at least that. BJ's really sorry about tricking this horse.
Oh, for the time being, yeah, sure. She was really sorry for the amount of time it took for Somber to, like, describe that emotion, and then, like, tears and rain. Okay, so, yeah, a lot of big action scenes that don't have any consequences on anyone. The only meaning, like, it could have just been a montage of, like a paragraph describing, and then a lot of terrible shit, and then it was bad, and it hurt, and it was scary. And BJ said no more. I'm done. I don't know why we were doing this in the first place. I want to go home. And Mama Rampage said, "Okay, sweetie, you would like some orange slices? Let's get you some Gatorade, and we can pack it in." But the necromancer they brought along, who turns out also to be a canon character from the original series, who is but also now, like, a lich, put a Because Somber couldn't be asked to, like, put a tipping clock on it ahead of time, but he couldn't because there weren't any stakes involved in getting into this damn thing. Like, None of our main characters have any reason to do it in the first place. So, like, he couldn't exactly, like, put, like, any kind of urgency on them doing it. So now it's been backfilled. That they've fucked up a nuke that was lodged in the building, and that's gonna go off soon. So they've got to get it done as soon as possible. And also, they can't not do it because the Lich has put a hex on Blackjack, and is basically holding her hostage.
Yes. Otherwise, her soul will literally explode out of her body.
And I guess, do you recall if the text makes any mention of, like, the spell will continue unless the caster dispels it, like, willfully?
Yeah, it has to be undone. It's a curse, but, like...
Okay, so it wouldn't end with the caster.
If,
for example, he were chopped into a dozen pieces with a...
Yes.
With a magic katana.
If he was chopped into so many small pieces and lit on fire, no, that would not solve the problem.
I'm worried that I'll forget about it. I think it's a conversation topic for next episode, our big book-wide recap. But I'm pretty frustrated by these hostage situations because, like, all of them are bad for the hostage taker. Like, that there's like a really dumb, unacknowledged power dynamic in all of these hostage situations that should, if anybody had half a brain or anybody had agency other than Blackjack, would just go real bad for the hostage taker. In like 100% of these cases, but I guess I'll try and sit on it.
Yeah,
I'm really excited to talk about it.
Yeah, just like as a kind of teaser for next week when we talk about like our sort of our broad themes. A lot of that episode is going to be about Rampage and how she's a wasted character, like because she's come up so much in these last few chapters. I feel it's really important to just talk about her broadly. So that's your sneak peek of next week. So stay tuned.
I'm really excited if Fi has additional information, because I don't know. I feel like we've already, like, tread that grant, like... But,
well,
yeah,
we've kind of talked in, like, broad terms, but we haven't really, like, dissected, like, what she means for the story and, like, what she's doing here still,
yeah.
And, like, a lot of just other problems with her.
Alright. So, anyway, another ill-conceived hostage situation. It leads us to... forcing to, like, backfilling why we're even in the building. Besides the rest of the, like, Horses 11 crew, all having their own motives anyway. every fucking extra in this pair of chapters has more investment to be in this stupid building than the principal characters.
Yes.
That
is true. They're just kind of along for the ride. It really makes you think that I think what actually happened with this is that Sombra had an independent idea for this little short story. The main characters still need to be here because this is Blackjack's ride, so like we can't just like go and do a story with a bunch of other smaller characters because it's a first person perspective.
And it's a fanfic project with no like discipline or like he couldn't. God forbid he just stop and write the thing he wanted and then come back. Extra disc contact interlude. Do those, Somber, you know? Like, one of the most popular series of all time, Hitchhiker Guide to the Galaxy, does it all the fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, in fact, it's the book, like, is formatted in that way. Like, it makes space for itself to do it. Anyway, I don't remember. Is there anything else in the recap? Anything else?
Like... No. I think you've adequately explained and also kind of given the sense of how disjointed and confusing everything is. Like, you didn't really do that in the right order, but that doesn't matter because, like, the order doesn't really matter of events. It's ticking clocks and action scenes and... just a mess of things. Like, a character died, but we literally met them the chapter before that, so who gives a shit? So I guess we can just launch into part two of Hightower. Part two, Inferno, because the building is now on fire because of the, like, nuke falling down into the deeper into the building. Which is where the, like, ticking clock is coming from is the nuke is now on fire, and eventually, like, its, like, payload will have, like, a fist of material will eventually detonate. So we actually start this chapter with Xanthe giving us, like, the actual clock with some, like, back-of-the-napkin mathematics that they basically have, like, maybe, like, 3 hours to vacate the building before this nuke goes off and they turn into vapor. This chapter was really, really hard to read. And of all of the chapters so far, you people should be grateful that I could get through this one at all. Because this is such a chaotic, disjointed mess. Like, I've talked in a number of chapters about how much, like, I enjoy really chaotic chapters in the story, because Supper, for the most part, has been pretty good at, like, making, like, those feel at least fun to go through. But this is just so messy. Like, so much of this chapter is about the build. Like, everything's on fire, and everything's smoky and chaotic, which I guess is, like, representative in the work being not making any sense, but at the same time, it's also just really hard to read. But they fight ghouls pretty much every single time anything is happening, so just picture every single time they're having a conversation or doing anything, they're also kind of fighting ghouls at the same time.
Zombieland hours.
Yep, real Zombieland hours. I'm just setting that up for now so that I don't have to keep saying, and then more ghouls show up. But yeah, they fight for a while.
It's more work than it's worth, but I almost wish you could, like, put in, like, an underlay of, like, this acapella of one or the both of us going, ghouls, 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 ghouls. Just as a baseline under the...
To the rest of the episode.
Yeah. Or at least the rest of the episode wherein, like, we're actually in the story. Like,
yes.
You'll know that we've, like, talking about something else, or the chapter's come to its conclusion when ghouls, 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 is no longer, like, binaurally, like, playing. Like,
while this is happening. But yeah, BJ is... for some reason, some kind of impressive tactician slash leader for literally no reason. Enough so that Charon, who is the, like, fucking ghoulified griffin that we have yet to talk about because he has done nothing in this this two-part chapter so far, to the point where I definitely forgot he was here. Sorry, I feel like I cut you off there, Weird. Were you about to say something?
No. So, character that, like, for all intents and purposes, is introduced at this exact moment, does...
He like, basically talks about how, like, oh, damn, if only you were a griffin, I would have followed you into hell and back. I super don't want to talk about griffins as interpreted by this story, but it's a very lackluster interpretation of griffins from the OG story, which... are kind of painted as, like, a race of mercenaries. In this, they're painted as a race of Klingons, that their entire culture is defined by war and contracts, which is kind of the case in the original story, but, like, there's a really huge difference between these two things. In this, it implies that griffins are just like that. In the original story, it's because their home country exploded by the Pegasi, so they're a, like, fucking bunch of refugees, but whatever. I'm not going to get into how mad that makes me.
Hi, I'm Bowlegged Jim from Nerflandia. I'm the only Nerflandian introduced in the series because, well, Nerflandia only comes up once and it revolves around me. Fanfic. In Nerflandia, all are bowlegged.
Yeah, exactly. Fucking Xanthe gets chewed out by BJ for reasons I cannot remember and did not disclose in my notes. Because it wasn't relevant. But BJ, like, loses it on her, which it becomes a regular thing that happens a lot in the later chapters. Keep in mind, this is both after both cases of BJ supposed to being fixed. Like, BJ has had two, maybe three different come-to-Jesus moments about maybe she shouldn't be so short and difficult with people and try to, like, interact with people in a way that isn't yelling at them. And yet this apparently doesn't ever go away as a plot character point. And the thing is, there's a diegetic reason why that's happening, and it's the fucking worst. This gives...
Oh, fuck! Sorry. One important thing missed out of the recap. This is really late into the episode to be going backward to the recap. So we find out that all cancer in this universe is alicorn cells, and BJ somehow still has a shitload of brain cancer, is able to, like, function with all of those tumors in her brain, where the thinking happens. But also, because all cancer is alicorn, this means that her brain is now connected to the alicorn Wi-Fi.
Yeah, she is now Wi-Fi enabled. That is relevant, because it's me coming up in a hot second. But yeah,
vomit.
Yeah, vomit away from the mic. But this gives Psycho Shy the opportunity to tell Blackjack off, which is a fucking comical sentence.
Wait a minute, she's here?
Yeah, Psycho Shy is also here.
Okay.
Psycho Shy never left the party.
I thought we were free of her for some reason.
Nah.
Okay.
She's still here.
All right.
But yeah, she tells her off by basically being like... I remember what it is. Xanthe gets is like, oh, you're like the maiden of the stars, and you're magic and cursed and all that shit, and you're the devil, basically. And Blackjack's like, no, I just got really lucky, and gets really mad at her for like making her seem like she's more special than she is, which is hilarious when you consider Blackjack as the specialist horse that is ever special. But she insists she's not the devil. Then Psycho Shy is like, oh wait, no, you actually are the devil, because like, all the things you've done up to this point are really scary and terrifying, and like, you could kill us at any moment, and all of us are afraid of you. And BJ kind of has a moment of realization, kind of like,
but
oh,
they aren't.
But apparently they are. Like,
okay.
Apparently, all right.
Okay.
She, like,
all right. Okay.
Like outside of Rampage, like. Apparently, like, Psycho Shy and, like, the rest of the crew kind of agrees that, like, outside of Rampage, you could kill literally all of us without breaking a sweat. Like, you're literally a cyborg deathmare, is the line used.
This like, two episodes ago.
Yeah.
This came up.
I feel like this story is somehow reactive to our complaints. Every time you bring something up, the story, like, acknowledges it just a little too late.
Says Somber through the echoes of time.
God. Oh, man. The only thing I could possibly imagine of why this keeps happening is because, like, one of Somber's four editors was doing basically what we're doing now the entire time, but wasn't, like, strong enough of conviction or will to, like, actually convince Somber to, like, stop writing this or, like, write this better. And instead, he's just addressing reactionary concerns over his work, as opposed to like improving the work. But
yeah, he's explaining it away, like he's backfilling
yes.
a justification, like any good reactionary. No, progress is unnecessary. I can just explain away that no, it was correct the whole time, and here's why. At least you know what? This is comforting because at least Somber knows that I am going to find and pants him.
And then throw a pie in his face. But yeah. Blackjack gives a shitty little speech that I had to like find the exact like thing of it. Because like, so we're given a bit that like, if I gave a shit about anything that was happening, this would be kind of cool. Where like, Blackjack's getting whispers in her ears of like, basically like, you know, calls from the void, like a dark impulse thoughts. And they're very clearly, like, the goddess whispering into her ear, but, like, she's not really, like, cognizant of that, like, effect of the goddess really yet. So, like, she's just... And it just sort of harmonizes with, like, Blackjack's already internal, like, suicidal ideation. So, like, it would be more compelling if, like, I gave a shit at all. Like, that's always, like, a persistent thing. These would be interesting ideas, like, and would be executed well if I cared at all about Blackjack's suffering anymore.
Or if like Somber had built up any trust with us, the audience,
mm-hmm.
like if there was like trust that this was going to pay off in some way, but so like as talked about already in this episode specifically, like there's no consequences for good or ill. There are no consequences. Blackjack neither grows nor degenerates. Blackjack is given like moment after moment of like affirming like life changing moments that have no impact on her personality. And so, sure, that's cute. Also, you're once again like it's so easy to forget that Lacuna is even there throughout. Like that's I think that's a worthy thing to talk about next episode is the degree to which Luna is a non-entity. Like, not even a non-character, a complete non-entity. She is the fucking Corviknight in the new Pokemon game. She's the fast travel system. And beyond that...
She might as well be a voice in Blackjack's head for as much as it matters. Because she contributes almost nothing else to the story and has almost no other character.
But not even that. Like, she doesn't even have a voice. Like the number of times you bring her up. Like, I'm sure she has dialogue in the story. But the number of times that she says anything of any impact is hyper-minimal. I'm sure you could go through our catalog and count up the number of instances of Lacuna being a presence in the story on one hand. Meanwhile, this is happening, and this is the perfect time for her to be a major driver in the story. That, like, BJ's being psychically assaulted, and she is a suffering sponge. She is a psychic sin eater. Like, this is the perfect time for her to, like, be directly relevant.
So, that's definitely going to come up more in book four. I think right now, one of the consequences of why Lacuna is not doing anything in this is that, like, it's important to note the compression of time. Like, I've talked about maybe, like, three or four paragraphs in the last, like, 20 minutes. Because so much is happening in this chapter that we just sort of kind of don't have time to, like, address, like, okay, and then what... And it's also important to remember, so much is happening, and we have 11 characters in the scene right now.
Jesus.
It is hard to, like... It's hard to go, okay, and then what's your thoughts on the story? And what's your thoughts on the story? So it's you are totally right, but like part of the reason why it's happening is because we are getting a ridiculous Three Stooges moment where there are simply so many characters and so many plot points happening right at the same time that we just don't have time to address them all with any sort of full like thought. We will get to it.
And then let's get on the march.
But yeah, I wanted to get this really ham-fisted and shitty speech that apparently so it's supposed to come across like they're actually going to like be convinced by this. But yeah, basically like everyone starts kind of like bickering over it. And I'm gonna read this out. I'm gonna try my best, even though it's really like dumb. You're right.
Wait, this is our third
speech I've ever done of this, like actual reading of the
Alright.
I just felt it was important to really hammer home how like unconvincing this is. So
hit me.
You're right, I said as the twisting in my chest slowly eased. You're right, I can be pretty damn scary, and I know that I shouldn't get angry for what Xanthe thinks of me. I guess I do match the maiden pretty well. I turned and looked back at Xanthe. I'm sorry. Then my eyes returned to Psychoshy, and I gave an exhausted smile. The difference is that I try and do better. I know I'm a fuck-up, but I haven't given up. I know that I can be a better pony, and I try to be. I don't always make it, and someday I might stop. And if I do, I trust that a better pony like Lacuna, Rampage, or Stygius, or you will put an end to me. Until then, I'm not Nightmare Moon, and I never will be. And apparently, that like mostly convinces them. basically, hey, you know what? I did a bunch of fucked up shit, but trust me.
Audio medium, but while you were reading that out, I was writhing in my chair like I was on fire. Oh man,
we could spend a whole episode just dissecting like how wrong every single line of this is. But the ones I like, I would just want to focus on the most is I think it's hilarious that her lineup of people that could stop her is like. It, like, that she thinks can stop her if she ever goes rogue is, like, Horse Satan, who at any time could be taken over by an evil goddess, Rampage Baby Murder Extraordinaire, some guy she fucked, and Psychoshy, a character named Psychoshy. That's our roster of checks and balance for lunatic psycho murder robot horse. It's fucking incredible. But like, I also like, I'm gonna address this more in the next chapter. But I think this is our theme of the whole story. I think this is like Samba really trying to hammer home what he thinks the like theme of the work is, which is that like, I may look like a monster, I may talk like a monster, I may seem like a monster, and I might fail the prophecy of being a monster, but I'm not. And we're like, in a better story, we would have a bunch of internal justifications for like why that.
You don't
isn't
know what's
case.
In my heart.
Yeah, but like,
I
Blackjack, you raped your best friend. That doesn't go away just because he like forgives you. That's forever. You have murdered multiple children in this story. Like a lot of
my
them.
My soul is between me and Jesus.
I mean, yeah.
I prayed to horse Jesus for forgiveness. And that's in the Lord's hands.
God.
You can't judge me. Yeah, we're back at it again. We're back at like, I just visions of Ronald Reagan telling the nation that, yes, I did sell a shitload of cocaine in American inner cities to fund nihilistic baby murdering hyper terrorists in South America, but my heart was good. I meant well in my heart, and that is why I will never be prosecuted. The last thing I have to say about that is that my mental image, and then I turned back to Psycho Shy. There's like a subgenre of like YouTube cartoon, and occasionally when like doing an animatic recounting like a story told in that stilted and stupid a way, the way they represent that is to like just use the transform tool and like screen cap record them, like transform tool move object. And then I turn to Psycho Shy, click.
Flip horizontal. But yeah, we're assured Blackjack is very scary. We learn a dumb plot that doesn't matter, that there's a traitor zebra meat locker who killed the
oh, that finally comes around. Okay.
Yeah, killed that ghoul horse. So it was never a traitor, it was always a zebra in disguise. I could fucking talk about how like that's got problems, but who gives a shit?
We got too much shows to talk about.
Yeah, we got so
a
lot of
chapters. Also, I don't give a shit about that weird cliffhanger where, nope, there was no murder. They just we just find out they spilled jam all of themselves and walked away.
They send off
a zebra spilled jam all over that zombie.
They send off the robot that was part of their party to go warn Meat Locker that the building is about to explode. And that they'll get nuked in the process. More ghouls happen.
Thanks, Blackjack. Thanks for...
thanks for uprooting...
Thanks for being the doom that came to...
Thanks for destroying another town. Like, this is like going on third town she's indirectly destroyed. Because, like, wall to Walmart's gone now, basically, because of her. Flank is now a raider den. And now Meat Locker is going to get displaced entirely. They fight more ghouls, and it's like too much for them to handle. So that it's a running race. It's also important to remember that as all these ghouls are fighting them, also the building is like going up more and more on fire. I will admit that there is a lot of consideration given to like a lot of the like weird secondary problems that fires have that like most things don't really deal with, like the fact that...
Oh, I guess it's also important to remember ghouls. Presumably they're fighting fire ghouls at this point?
Yes, they're also fighting fire ghouls.
Yep, inevitably, yeah, alright.
But yeah, and so there is a lot of consideration for smoke inhalation, and a lot of, like, structural damage problems, and a lot of, like... So there is, like, at least, like, the building feels realistically on fire, I guess, is like the thing I'll give it credit for. It's my like one thing I liked about the chapter. There's a tense moment where they flee into one of the bigger cells where they find out that There's a complicated thing where their plan is to like get it to sell by like, because all the plumbing's full of the acid goo monster. They're gonna like use it to eat to the floor. So they like rip a toilet out of a wall and like use the plumbing system from it. And they find out that like there was like a tunnel in it. I think is what it is. And they find out that this was like Deus's cell because we had to. Because a lot of this chapter going forward is going to be about Deus slash Doof. And we find out that, like, so a thing that I always had just kind of taken for granted was the fact that, like, Deus is a really stupid name. And I always kind of chalked it up to the idea that, like, the Reapers named him that because it's like, oh, you're a big giant robot thing. And, like, for whatever reason, there's an explanation that, like, the head of the Reapers kind of knows some zebra. So, like, so there's, like, you can almost tie that together as, like, oh, he's a war machine god thing, so he's Deus, like, Deus Ex Machina, the god of the machine, like, and you can kind of understand from, like, a cargo cult way how that name came from, but no, apparently, that actually came from his time in prison. Apparently, people started calling him God in prison. Which is just stupid. Like, that's a stupid plot detail to add. I'm not even addressing it from like a critical stance. It just sounds dumb. Like, why would, like, who would name him Deus, like, in a prison? Like, stereotypically in movies, like, you get names like Switchblade and like Kneebreaker and shit like that.
I mean, I don't know. I guess he was just like, but he's not even like
he wasn't even a robot yet.
So much! The only way this makes sense is if, like, there was a, no wonder, Chuds masturbate to Rorschach, kind of, like, you're all trapped in here with me kind of, like, scenario, wherein it turned out, even though he's a very special boy, with, like, absolutely no situational or social awareness, he, like, was a unstoppable brawler.
I mean, that, yeah, like, basically.
He beat up literally every single person. Like, every fellow inmate and guard.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that later on, but basically, like, there's a thing that he basically became, like, super jacked in prison. He got prison jacked.
And became Michael Myers?
I guess? Well, he, like, what happened was he
non-undead Jason Voorhees type?
He got sent to prison for being a rapist, but he was still a member of the guard, so he had some military training or whatever. He got yoked in prison, and then something happened that he got transferred to the Steel Pony Project, and they turned him into a robot, and they threw him back on the battlefield, and then, like, the apocalypse happened, and then he, like, can't die because, like, he's a Terminator now. And has been, like, as far as I understand, been living for, like, 200 years, just as, like, an apocalyptic war machine.
Like, if they didn't, like, do the, like, angle of, like, he's supposed to be, oh, fuck, now that's even worse.
That he's okay. Forrest Gump?
that he's the, like, incel nice guy, but pushed too far, like, imprisoned for what? Offending the sensibilities of some Wams? And so he gets so swole to compensate for the injustices done to him.
Sent to prison for triggering the libs. God.
Just for raping a lesbian who was also a friend and a cohort in arms? Like, fuck! If reactionaries were consistent at all in their values, like, this dude, like, Somber should fucking hate this guy. Should paint him at, like, should really conceptualize him consistently as the worst, like, to the fiber of his being. Because, like, just the list of betrayals, like, the scope of betrayal in that one action. Mm-hmm. And yet he's the victim. Like, he's victimized.
Yeah, it goes so out of its way to rehabilitate the concept of him in this chapter, which we'll get into in a hot second.
When he was a monster to the fiber, like...
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
If I put on my reactionary hat, if I try to embody, like, what reactionaries tell me their values are, this guy is a monster and deserved worse.
But anyways, we gotta mosey. We'll talk a little bit more about it when he comes back up again. So they smooze the floor, because that's what the goo's called. It's called smooze. It's a reference to something from the original show, but I don't have time to explain that. But they can't make a hole big enough for Lacuna to get through, because she can't teleport right now, because they're in an anti-teleportation field. But, and Lacuna's too big.
They're in a dungeon instance, yeah. So the fast travel is inactive.
Yeah, and she's too big, because she's a very large horse, as I've often mentioned. So she's basically like the split off, go on without me, I'll distract them thing. And then she flies off into the distance and disappears into smoke, and you hear some lasers go off and explosions go off, and she's presumed dead. So BJ gets...
Why would you presume that?
Because this chapter really tries. It gives Blackjack her whole, moment of grief and everything.
Oh, god damn it.
Yeah, okay, that's the thing that, I haven't really been...
Way to have faith in your, divinely powerful friends there.
But, that keeps happening, though. I guess I'll have to talk about this more in the next episode, but, something that, I have been cutting, excising out because it's redundant. Literally, and I cannot stress this enough, every time it is presumed someone dies or dies, there is a scene of Blackjack grieving about that death. And I've been cutting them out because it's utterly redundant to do that every single time. To the point where Rampage gets mad at her this time. She's sick of her shit, where she grieves every single time instead of staying focused on what's happening and trying to keep the people around her alive. Rampage gets a lot of sensible statements that she makes in this episode, which you feel kind of wasted because her character is such a weird arbitrary flux right now. But yeah, they get through a couple of floors with Smooze, and they manage to bust into the armory that so they can get some more guns and some more medical supplies and shit. They fight robots in the armory, which is cool, I guess. A baffling moment of confusion happens for Fi when they get into the security offices of the armory and find out that there's a bunch of ghouls in there that haven't gone crazy for some reason, even though a really well-established concept in the setting is that ghouls feralify, they become mad zombies if they're locked in small dark rooms for too long, and there's the only way to really avoid this is exposure to humanity and reinforcing their humanity. And these are just a bunch of sane ghouls that are just kind of hanging around in the security building.
They've been incredibly diligent about their games of 20 questions for the past 200 years.
that is really a problem of scale, isn't it? It's literally been 200 years of them being locked in a box that's been kind of on fire for most of their time in there. They're kind of delusional, but they're not, they're still, reticent. They gain another new follower, a bunch of new followers, which are a bunch of security guards, including a character named Blossom Forth, who's the only one that really gets a proper name. There is an incredibly unimportant detail in this, where they get into the gun vault to get all the guns, that they find a skeleton of a pony that killed themselves because they were a traitor to the Equestria and they couldn't take it. So they offed themselves before the war happened. So they've almost hit their checklist of things they need to do. Their last two things they need to do now is need to get into the warden's office so that they can access the file, and they also need to get into the Supermax security wing so that they can get access to the thing that Charon wants for his boss. But the problem with them doing that is that they can't get into those parts of the building without somebody in the security room basically hitting the lever. Because a thing in a lot of prisons, especially old prisons, is you need to radio checkpoints to unlock doors, because that way you don't have localized riots being able to move through the entire prison without having the central security being able to stop them. So at least that's accurate, but it's a whole thing. So one of them has to stay behind to do that, and snips the lich pony. Says okay, I'll stay behind, and I know how to teleport, so once you deactivate the teleport system, I'll just bounce back to you, but otherwise I'll just stay here. And the whole tension of that is, since the armory is now on fire, eventually Hoover's in there is going to melt to death. But and he also gives her instructions on how to save his friend who's in here. That's the whole reason why he's here.
Wait a minute. Did his friend go in ahead of time recently, or is he expecting to find a friend who's been in here
For 200.
For 200 years!
Well, it's because the guy was also a lich, too, so he will just be like, he won't die either. And he's just likely been living in that attic, the attic of the building for the last 200 years.
Ghoul or no, like, that person is incurably insane.
Probably, yes. Oh, that's when that happens. Okay, sorry, I got a little confused in my notes. We get a, they get into the Supermax, the wing of the building, which is really unimportant. It's just part of another small quest line where they had to get a bunch of stuff from a kingpin's, like, secret stash that was in the building. And this is where the build that gets very confusing. As far as I can understand, the Supermax, wing has, like, either its floor or its walls are made of, like, reinforced glass for some reason. The reason why that's important is since the building's on fire, the, like, superheated glass shatters and, like, they almost all die from the smoke inhalation. This is where it gets very confusing, because they managed to, like, get into somewhere that's safe for a little while so they can yell at each other. Like, I think it was the security room that was, like, in the Supermax cell, since, like, prisons usually have, like, security checkpoints near wings of prisons, but whatever. So I think they hang out there, as far as I can understand. This is all very confusing. But they need to rest for a second because Psycho Shy and Stygius are both, like, conked out by, like, smoke inhalation. Because since they're flyers, they're too high up most of the time because they're idiots. And, like, you know, smoke rises, so there were all the, like, there were where all the air wasn't. Around this time, Blackjack has, like, another hallucination moment. I don't know what prompts it, but, like, these hallucination moments have gotten very, very confusing when they happen, because there's no indicator of when they're occurring, like, the way memory orbs would, because, like, memory orbs would have, like, a very, like, very obvious, like, line break kind of style that would tell you that you're in a memory now, and those don't happen anymore. So, and there's not even, like, faux versions of that, so it just starts talking about characters as if they're there, and it becomes very confusing. But yeah, BJ, sci-fi imaginates, Deus after, I remember what prompts it. She decides to ask the security guards who, like, are crazy about Doof, and they talk about how he was, like, despite him being sent in for being a rapist, he was some sort of, like, hero of the prison who, like, defended the weak from the strong and made sure that, like, everyone was, like, no one got beat on too hard, and he fought all the bad guys, and was in solid.
Clench your ass cheeks, somber, because I'm gonna drive your undies way up them cheeks. I'm gonna hang you up by a flagpole,
and he
somber.
Was. And he was in solitary a lot of time because he was fighting people too much, and they need to keep him isolated from the rest of the prison population because he was just too much of a hero, I guess. And then we get a back.
Hero rapist worshipped as god, too noble.
I can't imagine who that reminds me of in this story.
Oh, fuck, you're right.
Yep, that's the whole point. That's why they're doing this. That's why Somber's doing this. Somber's rehabilitating Doof because Blackjack needs to be rehabilitated as well. But they find out that he, like, snapped after he, like, because he kept writing Twist, who is his rape victim, basically, like, apology letters. And apparently she refused to read any of them. And then she just, like, told one of the other, like, parts of their, like, the Macintosh Marauders to just, like, tell him directly, like, I don't want to see him ever, which is a totally valid thing to do. But because of the way this is all framed, it's framed as if they were supposed to, like, feel sympathy for Doof who isn't able to explain the situation and what happened. It's important to remember, because it's been a number of chapters at this point, what the situation actually was is that Doof is heavily coded to basically be Forrest Gump levels of autistic and was tricked by a evil woman to, like, rape Twists out of her, like, lesbianhood, and that's why he's in prison now. Just keep that in mind.
And he's so selfless that when he found out that he would never receive forgiveness, he became a violent nihilist.
Yes. And then they filled him with super science.
It's almost as though his regret was purely selfish.
Yes, almost.
All right. Like, I'm sure there's so much more to, it needs to be said right now. I can't, like, not, don't want to meet Somber. Like, jokes about, like, pantsing him aside, that would dirty my hands to touch him. I am at this point convinced that, like, Somber is probably dangerous. Like, for somebody to have this kind of worldview, to some, for, like, somebody to, like, be able to, like, write a, like, in order to have this perspective, like, I shudder to think the things he's done to the people close to him.
All right, we gotta move on a little, like, kind of fast now, though.
Yeah.
We'll put another pin in it. We'll talk about Doof more next week. Yeah, they search the cells. They find out that, like, all there was no ghouls in there, so that means that they must have escaped before the like bombs hit. They managed to con the warden into like letting him in the office because he's like hooked up to the PA system. By saying that, like, oh yeah, there was a prison breakdown, and like you need to go find them, and he's like, oh, I'm delusional, so I'll let you in. They find out that Snips, the lich horse, he lied about being able to like teleport, and his dying moments are to like activate the doors so that they can like get to the security checkpoints. And like it begs BJ to like go help Snails, who's the other one in the attic. Yeah, BJ has a full memory orb moment where she sees Doof and Vanity, and we find out that like Doof also like has like bought his own hype, and he also thinks he's like the god of the prison now, and he's like a basically different character at this point because he's just like this big old dumb macho tough guy hero who like is such a tough guy that like you can't argue with him now, I guess, whatever. Because his characterization is wildly inconsistent in between scenes. BJ then, like, basically just...
No, he's just forsaken his fallen nature. He was a beta! But, now he's forsaken his mother and his fallen nature. And he's alpha.
Yeah, now he's just Chad. He's upgraded to... It's the Virgin Doof versus the Chad Deus. The dumbest argument comes up. He, like... Basically, BJ worries, like, gives the plot away a little bit by, like, openly worrying that, like, maybe I'm becoming, like, Deus. And I'm like, becoming's kind of like, you've already, like, passed the gate on that one. But we need to start, railroad the story dead, stop the story dead for a little while. BJ and Rampage get into an argument where Rampage is like, what the fuck, why are you still helping, Snails, or Snips and Snails now that Snips is dead? And... BJ's like, well, because he's doing it for his friend, and Rampage kind of like goes off on him, and off on her, saying like the ends don't justify the means, which is funny to come from a baby murderer. And then like clocks Blackjack really hard in the head, because the only like someone brought this up at some point, like a friend of ours brought up the point that like the only way like any scene transitions in this story is through head trauma for some reason. Like, Somber just, like, is incapable of, like, having a scene transition to another scene without Blackjack getting knocked out and having an hallucination moment. But, skipping really fast, Rarity, Blackjack has a memory of Rarity doing necromancy stuff and it all failing. And this is when we find out a dumb plot point that I brought up way earlier, that I made a complaint about, in that Blackjack, for a while, had a cello that she could play for seemingly no reason. And I gave it away early, but this is where it like explains it, that like the reason why she can play it really well is not because she has any sort of inborn talent, because God forbid she has any inborn talent for anything besides murder. And instead it's just that a cello has part of Octavia, who the person who could play it's soul inside of it, because she was part of Rarity's like necromancy experiments, because Octavia needed the money because she had been blacklisted, because she wrote a song that had seditious material in it. The instrument just is haunted, basically, and haunting can like confer skills and effects onto a person who's interacting with it. There's like, I can't talk about
it. There's a heavy weight on my heart on the idea, like, I watched the first season. And so, like, the idea, like, I'm trying to parse, like, the notion of Rarity taking a basic the equivalent of a high school friend and like murdering them and binding their souls.
So it's more complicated than that, because severing souls doesn't kill a person. You can split a person's, like, part of a person's soul and put it into something. So she didn't kill her to do so. And also, in this book, this isn't canon, but in this book, the magic black book, which is the Zebra Necomicon, it's not actually called that, but that's what it is. It's the Necronomicon from Lovecraftian Mythos, but it's a zebra version of it. Has the soul of the person who made it in it, and it whispers dark things into people that makes them want to use it.
Sure.
And so Rarity doing this is all because she has, like, evil, profane whispering in her head.
Driven mad by
dark zebra magic, yeah.
I'm just trying to create a portmanteau of Al-Hazarad and zebra. Al-Zebarad.
It would have, like, an X in it somewhere, because that's how, like, zebra names work in this story.
Fuck. All right.
Zebexarad.
Next.
Next! There's a plot point about, like, something I can't really even bother going into. But we also, like, we have a discussion with one of Rampage's other headmates, which is the weird, like, thug personality, having a conversation with BJ. And, like, there's a bit of, like, dumb foreshadowing that I didn't notice, that, like, all of her, like, headmates have epithets that start with P, which is a foreshadowing for something that'll happen later, because it's the punk, the predator, the professor, the police, and the psycho.
I hate it.
Yeah, I hate it, too. But, yeah, they go into the attic, and admittedly, like, if I cared more... the concept of the attic is kind of scary, because the whole, like, as opposed to the whole rest of the building, the whole environment is, like, terrifyingly cold and, like, dark and, like, riddled with strong, like, necromantic, like, vibes off of everything, which I could go into, like, kind of, like, how much I love the, like, kind of dissonance of, like, it's the happy land of Equestria! Oh, there's all these skulls and melting candles and corpses. Oh, that's bad. And it's
there's no contrast. Like, it's all that.
Yeah.
It's all that all the time.
Yes. Especially right now. But yeah, they managed to find Snails, who is not mad, and he's just dumb, because that was his character in the original, like, show. And even though, like, this story goes out of its way to make sure that characters get, like, full, like, arcs past their time as a character in the show, like, Twist has a whole thing about her, like, unlearning her, like, learning how to, like, work through her lisp and shit. Snails is just the same dumb idiot that he was in the original story, and I, like, whatever. It doesn't matter, it's not really that important, but it's still just, like, a weird, it was really jarring to be like, hey, all these characters have these, like, all these complex lives, and then Snails is just, like, the same, like, goofy one-note moron he was before. Except now he knows necromancy, which was almost be a fun joke. This, like, Looney Tunes-esque idiot with necromancy seems really funny. But we also learned that, like, he's... Because we learn around this point that, like, Snips... It's not that Snips had no intention of unsealing the curse. It's that he pretty much couldn't, because the high-level curse, he's bad at doing the in reverse, basically, so he couldn't fix it even if he wanted to. But Snails might be able to, because they, like, completed each other's knowledge of necromancy. Like, Snips was really good at being able to sever souls, and Snails was able to reconnect them. So there's at least, like, kind of a thematic connection there. It's the one time I'll give it to them.
I was gonna ask about that. I was gonna it's okay. Anyway.
But
next,
yeah, we also learned the fact that Snails probably can't do it. Maybe is gonna try, but we don't know if it's gonna work.
I'm sure.
Then we get into the final, like, actual final set piece of the chapter. So they have to, like, go into the warden's office to face down the warden, and the warden has cottoned on that they're not, like, actually, because they've been lying about the idea that they're representatives of the, like, of the OIA or the MOM.
My brain has been completely is turning to, like, ash over the course of this one, and so all I can imagine is, for some reason, I have a strong mental image of, apropos of nothing, the warden attacking the party with, like, a spin dash, like a Sonic the Hedgehog.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Like, he just didn't saw it. It's all he could muster. It's much dumber than that. So they finally get into the Warden's office, and they realize that, like, he's been exposed directly by the, like, nuclear warhead's radiation for, like, the last 200 years directly. So he is now enormous for some reason. Like, he's just a really, really huge. and partly fused with the floor.
Foolish Ricky O. Did you not anticipate? The Warden is best at Kung Fu.
Oh, it's so much dumber than that. So, like, so admittedly, the it's somewhat evocative of this, like, gigantic, like war monster who's, like, on fire perpetually. Like, that's, like, half buried in the ground because of his weight. And, like, fused with the floor. And there's, like, missile defenses everywhere, and he's, so they have to fight all that. But, like, so, the part that really kills this for me, and I had to double-check this, because this was something that was burned into my memory, because this was right around the time that the major hiatuses really started happening, so a lot of these chapters really stick out of my mind because they're more recent to me, and also there was a lot of time for me to digest each of the chapters before the next moving on to the next one. But what was burned into my memory about this chapter was that included, hyperlinked into the chapter, was a YouTube link to the song The Night on Bald Mountain. And I double-checked, that is still in the PDF. There's still a YouTube link to Night on Bald Mountain. And that's so fucking hilarious to me.
So also, wait, so this is a tower of screaming insane flesh surrounded by missile turrets?
Yes.
Moonmaster!
yeah.
Oh, sorry, I had something in my master!
Yeah.
No, it's...
Which is double funny because the goddess is the master, so, like...
Yeah.
We've already seen this trick once right. before. But yeah, they fight him for a while.
I mean, in fairness, like, kill 6 billion demons, like, embeds links to soundtrack in its alt text, but, like, that's a much more tongue-in-cheek and self-aware piece of media. A weird thing to do.
Especially because, okay, so it's important to note, too, that this is meant to be diegetically playing in the fight while it's happening, too. Like, I guess the speaker system is just playing Night on Bald Mountain while this is happening for, like, a sense of dramatic irony.
I think I'm going to need to lay down after this.
After this chapter. We're almost done. We've got a couple more points to hit, and then we can get to our, like, wrap-up and then plug everything else. But, yeah, they fight Hobble. That's the character's name is Warden Hobble. Admittedly, there is kind of a fun thing about the fact that they don't really care about fighting him all that much because he's, like, stationary and also, like, mostly an annoyance. So it's mostly them fighting while they've got, like, Xanthe, like, working the computers to turn the lockdown off. They crack the lockdown. They fight Hobble for a while. They get the, like, code that they need to, like, transmit so that BJ can figure out the next location to go. It's Shadowbolt Tower, which... important thing to note, Shadowbolt Tower is its base is in the core. It's like a tower that is in the middle of the core of Hoof, and it stretches out into the sky. So they either have to get into the core, which has been explicitly told to us impossible, or they have to go to the Enclave. Yay! But just to, like, kill steal this whole moment and suck out any sort of, like, dramatic tension of them fighting this idiot, like, on the intercom system, the voice of what sounds like Goldenblend comes up again, and he's like, oh, this person works for me, you need to stand down, and, like, the Warden isn't having it. So, like, the voice is like, huh, that's very interesting, give me a moment. And then, like, a death laser shoots through the whole building again, like it happened that other time, and just evaporates the Warden. So he's just dead by death laser.
I hate this.
Yeah. This is a really bad final chapter to have for, like, a thing. But yeah, and they can clearly see that, like, the direction it's coming from is from the core again. So the core can just shoot death lasers at whatever it needs to, apparently. But yeah, we get, like, one last thing. Like,
at unlimited distance with perfect accuracy.
Yes. There is a good reason for it. It just, it's like, who gives a shit? It's, I think it would be more the more problem I have with it is the shitty, like, every time Blackjack fights something that is too tough for her to fight, it just gets solved for her by the core. And that sucks. But yeah, that happens, and then Blackjack's like, yeah, we turned off the lockdown, we're gonna escape, we did the thing, and she, like, looks out into the, like, cool air of the core, and she's like, yeah, we survived Hayataro, we've beaten it, and then her soul explodes, and she dies. Again.
That would seem like more than death. That would seem like... This would seem like a hyper-death. This is an irreparable kind of extra death.
A true death. A double death. Death 2, the sequel.
And this is how the chapter ends?
Yep.
With
Blackjack dying again.
Or how the book ends.
Yes.
This is just standard operating... How many more books do we have?
Two more.
Is this now standard operating procedure?
What, Blackjack dying every chapter? Every one of them? Almost?
Every book?
Yep.
No. No, I refuse. I don't... Fi, is there anything better we could be... Anything better we could be doing? I don't...
I can recommend it, even though I haven't finished it. I can recommend, like, maybe, like, going out and watching, like, Dragon Prince. Dragon Prince is apparently pretty good. The last couple seasons have been. Watched a handful of episodes. Yeah, and I've been meaning to dig into it.
One of the better face turns I've ever seen in media. I think those lads have really, really made up for how very, very bad Korra was. Korra was extremely bad. And Dragon Prince is not. It tells a pretty compelling story about cycles of retribution. Better to, like, stop the recrimination and hurting at a certain point. The main necromancer is very much a bad guy, and kind of, it's kind of like the main villain, the villain that we follow throughout the course of the series, I think might in some ways be an apology for, like, how badly they dropped the ball and accidentally did a poopy on it in Korra with making excuses for these kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, I think outside of that one character, it does an interesting job of, like, doing a sympathetic explanation of, like, how people might be driven, like, reasonable people might be reasonably driven to black magic. Yeah, so yeah, Dragon Prince part 2, pretty good. Note to self, I want to finish out the most recent seasons of also Netflix series She-Ra.
Yes, I've heard that's quite good. My brother's been watching it a lot.
Like, the second season was like what I've watched so far is improving over time, and it started decently strong. Final recommendation, podcasts most people I don't think really know about, the Dead Pilot Society. Dead Pilot Society, which is a series where people turn pilots for TV shows that never got off the ground into radio plays. They read a script for a never produced pilot, and it's pretty hit or miss. it's equal parts. Yeah, I can see why this never went anywhere. Probably shouldn't have. And oh, that's a shame. That would have been really cool if that got the chance to happen. So Dead Pilot Society is my official recommendation for doing anything other than don't read this story. Why is this wrong? Why is this?
Yeah, we're going to be getting deep into it next week when we do the wrap up.
The thing I hate most about it is that it forces me to confront in myself my own, like, writer's block, my own, like...
Your own weaknesses as a creator, yeah.
Yeah, that, like, Somber, like, has it in him to to do this to us all.
But the thing I always insist about this, before we get into the wrap up, we'll talk about this more next week, I guess, is that like it doesn't. But that's the thing, is that like you have standards. Somber doesn't. Like, you can fart out a lot with your asshole and you don't give a shit. Like, if you just don't care and just write literally every idea that ever comes to you into your work, then like you produce this content. But I guess it's telling. I think it's telling that online creation, the bar for entry is way lower than you're thinking it is. And any writer or creator or artist that's worried about the idea that they won't find an audience, like, this found an audience, and this is full of rapists. So like, whatever you're doing is probably better than that. So like, that's my call to action. Yeah. Go make something.
I'm remembering. I think that might have been something I said in our pilot episode of this very podcast. That's a positive. Like, yes, you know what? I'm gonna grab that with both hands. That's why we're doing this. That's a positive outcome of this thing we're doing.
Yeah. So.
Oh fuck.
We gotta do our plugs now.
Where I was going.
Yeah.
So, very not safe for work, Twitter, Thou Art Fi.
To
follow, Fi, what he's doing. I'm, at Weirdington E, is mine. I don't retweet, post, or, like anything not safe for work, but I follow a few not safe for work things. You can email me directly, and you know what? I double dog dare you to email me directly. I bet you can't. I bet you can't. I bet you can't. I bet you. I don't. I bet you. I bet you're. I don't know. Think of. Hey. Email me with like your weaknesses, so that I can better directly taunt you with them. Like that, I can like neg you into like giving us feedback, because I bet you can't. Anything at all. I just want a vague sample size of how many of you are out there.
Remember to like,
ideally,
subscribe.
Yeah, feed the algorithm, gods. Feed the algorithm. It doesn't matter what you comment with, like, literally, Adaskif, would be enough. But yeah, like, comment, subscribe,
you can donate to Weird's Ko-Fi directly. I think every time I bring up the Patreon, I keep pushing it back farther and farther. To be honest, I think that, like, I've been saying this everything. I definitely think that probably we're actually going to be starting it in the new year, because I've been having some big thoughts about this month, and I think that we're definitely going to be taking off, the week of Christmas, because like I just don't want to like want to have to do recording immediately after Christmas.
That's our gift to ourselves.
Yeah,
that's what we get.
So we're gonna have a weird one where we're gonna have this episode a wrap up, then we're gonna do one episode into the next book, do a break for another week, and then we'll
just
immediately
appetite wetter.
Yeah, right? Just to be into the next week, into the month. But then after that, January. We'll definitely be starting up the act. Like, we'll have a full the full Patreon. You'll be able to drop money on us. We'll be have bonus episodes. First episode will be a review. Other than that, though, we'll be taking suggestions for other things we can do. We can handle other books within the same genre of side stories. Or we might do short reviews for that, because I know a couple of them that might be worth doing. That we could do a couple of Somber's other works and laugh about how he's never improved as a creator. We could handle other things. Like, I don't know. Throw us suggestions on what people would be interested in us talking about.
I sure hope they do. I really, for morale reasons, need people to email shit to weirdingtonesq@gmail. Otherwise, Fi, I'm pretty sure I'll be fully convinced this was just all a terrible mistake.